Good morning, and I'm Cheryl Harrell, and welcome to Lifestyles on the Oregon Coast. It is a Friday morning, and always at Friday mornings at 8:35 is Healthy Connections, of course, a presentation of Samaritan Pacific Communities Hospital. We thank them very much for this program. It's going to be a very, very interesting program, and certainly is a hot topic around not only the United States, but around the world. We want to say good morning to all of our listeners, of course, in Washington, D.C., in Colorado, as well as Northern Southern California. We say good morning to our Oregonians with web feet, although there's not much rain right now in the gorgeous state of Oregon. And, of course, we say good night to our military overseas, and we thank them for keeping us safe last night. We also have listeners in Asia and Europe, and we welcome them to our program this morning. Healthy Connections is going to feature a very interesting program, as I said this morning. We're going to be talking to Dr. William Muth. He is an internal medicine physician, but he has a specialty, and it is infectious diseases. And, of course, we're going to be talking about lots of topics of interest this morning. And we say good morning to Dr. Muth. Good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Muth, I know you're very busy. You are in Corvallis, and of course you're tied in to Samaritan Hospital in Corvallis, and it is the Samaritan Communities Hospitals that are always a part of here for us on the Central Oregon Coast in both Lincoln City and Newport. Of course, Corvallis, where the center of the hospital is, Lebanon and Albany. Dr. Muth, would you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and your background, first of all, this morning?
Yes. I am an infectious diseases physician and have arrived here in Corvallis in January, so I'm a relative newcomer to this part of the world. I grew up in West Virginia in a town called Morgantown, and I went to medical school in West Virginia, did residency training in internal medicine in Madison, Wisconsin at the University of Wisconsin, then did a fellowship in infectious diseases in Tucson, Arizona, at the University of Arizona, and then spent 3 years in the United States Air Force fulfilling a obligation I had. So I had training in a variety of places and am very partial to the Pacific Northwest. My wife and family and I enjoy the outdoors, and so we were very happy to have the opportunity to relocate here. I had been in practice more recently in the northern part of the state of Michigan. So anyhow, I've had a variety of experiences, and I'm very happy to be out in the in Oregon and providing infectious disease services to the communities that Samaritan serves.
Well, we are very pleased to have you this morning, and we welcome you to the state of Oregon. It is obviously a gorgeous state, and hopefully you're going to have a wonderful summer. This will be your first summer in the state of Oregon, right?
That is correct.
All right. Dr. Muth, you are an infectious disease physician. Of course, you were telling me before we went on air that this is part of internal medicine, and infectious diseases most often are we're seeing on our news right now. So let's open this conversation up and let's talk about the swine flu, something that is very much a part of this country and around the world. Can you tell us kind of an overview of how this has transpired and what's happening in today's country and around the world?
Sure. Influenza virus is a virus that's very unstable in respect to its genetics. So it has the opportunity to change its stripes, so to speak, very readily. Every year, what we call seasonal influenza is a slightly different virus, and as a consequence, persons to protect themselves have to get a different vaccine every year. Occasionally, the virus can make wholesale changes such that it is a strain of influenza that no one has immunity to. And in those cases, rather than the genetics of the virus just drifting, it actually undergoes what's called a genetic shift. And so it becomes a strain of virus that has the potential to cause a pandemic of human illness. Pandemic meaning that it can that people are not immune to it, and it can spread around the world and cause illness. In this case, that is indeed what has happened. The swine flu, otherwise known as H1N1 flu, is a pandemic strain to which there is very little immunity. Fortunately, to this point, although there have been some deaths to this virus, it has not behaved as aggressively as it might. There is history of very aggressive pandemic influenza epidemics, and the kind of the poster child for that was the 1918 flu, in which there were 500,000 or more deaths due to influenza in the United States.
Did this strain of flu come out of Mexico?
I don't know that we know exactly where the current swine flu originated. I know the public health authorities were investigating some unusual strains of virus in this country, for example. Obviously, Mexico is where the problem was identified as a potential pandemic strain, and that's where, as you recall, there were there was a lot of concern. There were travel restrictions and quite a bit of economic disruption in Mexico when this problem was identified earlier this spring.
How many cases of swine flu, and we call it the H1N1 strain right now? And, you know, I guess people, it's interesting to look at, our news anchors are still using swine flu, and they've asked us in this country not to do that because it is really hurting the pork industry, and they associate this with, you know, with pork and pigs and swine. So they've tried very hard to call it the H1N1, you know, infection.
Yes, it is not something you can get from eating pork, and it is, that is a bit of a misconception, and as is true in these episodes, there can be misconceptions. So the obligation of the public health authorities is really to communicate well with the people, the population. I think for the most part that has occurred in this case. But yeah, there are always concerns about things that can be misconstrued. You were asking me how many
cases are in this country right now?
You know, I don't have that answer at my fingertips. I know there have been thousands of cases identified, and the likelihood is there have been many, many more than have been identified, because the actual specific identification of this virus requires some rather sophisticated testing. So, but there have been thousands, and there have been a number of deaths in the United States. The deaths have been said to occur in persons who have underlying medical conditions to a significant extent, but that has not been always the case. Some people who have been healthy have also succumbed to this illness.
Do they have a vaccine now that is suitable for this infectious disease, or are they working on it and looking towards the fall and winter months that they will need this vaccine?
There is a vaccine that's being developed for this strain of influenza. It is not currently available. It takes a number of months for a vaccine to be created. They have to, first of all, obtain the what they call seed virus, because influenza vaccine requires that the virus be grown in eggs, and then the virus is killed and processed to form vaccines. So it usually takes a period of months to create this vaccine. Whether or not this vaccine will be administered on a wholesale basis this fall has yet to be decided. I think the public health authorities, including the Centers for Disease Control and the World Health Organization, are really tracking the progress of this virus and trying to make some determination as to who and when vaccines should be administered to susceptible individuals.
Have you seen any cases of this influenza in your offices or hospital?
I have not seen a case. I know there have been a couple individuals who were in the emergency room in Corvallis who were tested and were positive, but I have not personally seen a case that I've known of that has this virus. As your listeners will know, it does behave similar to influenza virus in terms of the illness in general. So people with flu-like symptoms, which include fevers and respiratory symptoms and lots of muscle aches, could have this virus. And in many cases, we're not doing the specific testing at the recommendation of the public health in persons who are healthy and who otherwise appear to be not severely ill, or at least not requiring hospitalization for a flu-like illness.
Every fall and winter, obviously, across the country, senior citizens are asked to get their flu shots. And how important is that for, obviously, seniors and those individuals that, you know, maybe that their conditions and their bodies are not as strong as they should be in being, and acquiring flu vaccinations?
Oh, it's very important that elderly persons be immunized for the flu. In seasonal influenza, which when I say seasonal influenza, I mean the typical influenza that occurs during the winter, the elderly are at particular risk of having complications from the flu. So it is really very important that they receive their vaccine. There are other ways of dealing with influenza. There are antiviral medication, but it's better to prevent becoming ill and not needing the need for medication than becoming ill and then trying to access the supply of antivirals from physicians.
One of the things that I've always wanted to ask is that oftentimes we understand that bacterial infections can be cured with antibiotic, but antibiotics will not treat a virus. Is that true, and does that make a challenge for us in this country in finding the appropriate medications?
It is true, although there are different. You bring up the issue of different types of microorganisms that are capable of causing disease, and there are basically several categories of microorganisms. There are bacteria, there are fungi, and there are viruses. And viruses are these minute particles that, for the most part, we do not have effective therapies for. However, there are therapies available now for some viruses, including influenza. But again, it's better to be vaccinated to avoid becoming ill than it is to try to rely on these antiviral medications. The influenza virus not only has the ability to change its character in terms of its genetics, but also has developed resistance to antiviral medications. And obviously, if there were strains circulating to which antiviral medicines were not beneficial, then no antiviral medicine would be helpful.
As you shared with us at the beginning of this program that you are an infectious disease physician, how concerned and what is your biggest challenge that you see as this type of a physician for your patients that are even a bigger concern, you know, than today's swine flu? What do you deal with mostly in your everyday diagnosis of patients?
Well, there's a lot of issues that infectious disease doctors work with. In general, individual patients we see for infectious disease problems of one type or another. I think a real problem is that of antibiotic or antimicrobial resistance. These drugs, penicillin being the first antibiotic, for example, have been miracles, and they've obviously made lives much better. We've been able to treat infections, but we've now been using antibiotics for 60 years or more, and the bacteria have developed means of resistance to antibiotics. So I think there's a real problem with antibiotic resistance, so I think it's really crucial that that patients and physicians recognize this problem and that antibiotics be used only for indications that are very legitimate and where it's obviously there's a need for an antibiotic. Otherwise, the unnecessary use of antibiotics can lead to further resistance, and there are at this time some types of infectious illness with certain bacteria that the antibiotics no longer are effective for.
You know, one of the interesting things back in the 60s and 70s is that young mothers would give their newborn babies and babies maybe from 1 year old to 4 years old or 5 year olds antibiotics. And the tetracyclines that they gave actually stained children's teeth and things because of too much antibiotic or particularly tetracyclines. Can you speak to that then of what it's like today? Because you're speaking about we're not giving as many antibiotics. Is that right?
Well, I think the effort is to avoid inappropriate use of antibiotics. And indeed, Yes, tetracyclines were found to cause teeth discoloration, and is an example of the fact that antibiotics, though good, can have unintended consequences. And so it's very important that we monitor for any of those sorts of adverse effects.
What else in your practice besides antibiotic resistances do you see in every day?
Well, I also see a problem of infections acquired in the hospital. Patients go in the hospital for one reason or another, and then unfortunately can develop hospital-acquired infection. And there's a big push across the country to try to do things to limit that potential. So that's a real important aspect of infectious disease efforts, to try to prevent infections in the hospital.
Is that from cross-contamination or?
It is from cross-contamination. Patients these days who get hospitalized tend to be very ill. In the old days, there were hospitalizations for relatively minor medical problems. That doesn't occur any longer. So now people that get into the hospital tend to have significant illness, and they are at risk of infection by virtue of their underlying problems. And so it's very crucial that healthcare workers do their best to avoid spreading infection from one individual to another in hospitals. So it's very important that we do all we can to limit that problem.
Dr. Muth, we're going to take a break for just a moment. I want you to stay right with me, and it will only take moments as we do this, but we will be back with our guest right after these messages.